Joseph.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by GoToMeeting. I love GoToMeeting, and if you aren't using it, you need to try it. If you're not using a web conferencing tool or a service that you use is kind of, well, herky-jerky and a little clunky, use my first choice, which is GoToMeeting. Easy to use, secure, affordable. You really just get that wonderful opportunity to work in a virtualized state in no time at all. Easy to set up, easy to tell people how to use, and with voice over IP included, you can call in via the phone or your computer. Simply try GoToMeeting at GoToMeeting.com/podcast. You get a 30-day free trial on that. And what's great about it is it's about a $49 value. You can do all the things that you want to do. Check it out. Run it through the tests. And I really encourage you to do so. Go to GoToMeeting.com/podcast. And this episode is also brought to you by Matrix Direct. You know how important life insurance is? I don't have to tell you about that because it really provides a safety net for you and your loved ones. You know, it should really be an essential part of every family's financial plan. But a lot of people don't like to deal with it. It's too expensive, time-consuming. Who wants to deal with all that? But you know what? It really doesn't have to be. I've discovered coverage through Matrix Direct that can save you up to 75% or more on term life insurance. And you're not going to have to jump through a lot of hoops to get there. No way. The licensed insurance agents at Matrix Direct will manage the process from start to finish, so you don't have to. Plus, when you buy life insurance, you definitely don't want to settle for a one-size-fits-all plan. That's another thing I really like about Matrix Direct. They offer a wide range of flexible plans, and they make it easy for you to understand your options. So you can really decide what coverage is right for your family, and you only have to pay for what you need. Now, Matrix Direct has helped over 4 million people with their life insurance needs, and they can help you too. Just go to matrixdirect.com/TDI for a straightforward information and a free quote. Really, just it's that easy. So take a moment right now to go matrixdirect.com/TDI, and they'll give you all the details. Now, policies are issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. It's not available in all states. For details about this paid advertisement, please visit Matrix Direct online at matrixdirect.com/TDI. And a good afternoon to you, good evening, good morning, whatever time of day it is. Thanks for listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is episode number 167, towards the end, almost to the very end of June, the end of the quarter for mutual funds and for money managers, and we're starting the next season of earnings. We're at episode number 167. We have to wait, till the 2 weeks, I guess, for Alcoa to come out with their earnings on July 12th. That should be exciting. A lot of concern about what's going to happen, the profit squeeze, the margin squeeze that we're going to see possibly due to the fact that there's a lot more employees on the rolls right now, or at least not a lot, but there's some. There's a lot more expenses now when it comes to healthcare, possibly some of the embedded costs of the rising prices of some materials. For example, cotton has been up over 60% over the recent months. And if you think about those companies that are making product from their cotton, what happens to their cost factors and then down to their net profit margins? So that's something that we're going to be looking at and we're going to have to be watching very carefully. In the first quarter of last year, second quarter, third quarter, it was all about earnings EPS. You know, are companies going to beat EPS? Then revenues started to fit in and get a lot more viewing and a lot more attention. And now there's going to be this concentration, I believe, on profit margins to see just what these companies are doing and how they're actually able to, you know, stand up to the current environment right now. We have a great guest on today, somebody who was on some time ago, actually about a year or so ago, and someone who I maintain contact with because, as you know, I'm one of my favorite periodicals to read, especially the Monday special edition, is Investor's Business Daily. And one of the lead writers of that and one of the people that does the daily video and analysis and analyzes stocks is Kate Stalter. And she'll be with us in just a little while. And we're also going to do some work on some of the week in review and talking about a lot of the questions that you have mailed me. We have lots of listener questions out there. And for those of you that don't know or would like to send me something, please do so. Simply write to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. So let's do a quick recap of the week. Last week, I got a couple of emails in from people said that I was ranting and raving like a drunken lunatic when it came to the opening of the discussion. I was calling this one stupid and that one stupid. Let me just recap just for a moment in a non-ranting base, just not as maybe the lunatic side of Andrew Horowitz that you saw recently. Maybe calmly and very gracefully discuss some of the things that happened with regard to the things we were talking about. Well, the first thing that happened was the Prime Minister of Australia was ousted this week, and there was the concern because of the backlash over the extraordinary super tax on miners, as well as the fact that the carbon credit and the CO2 reduction, the greenhouse work that was being done, was pretty much put aside by Mr. Rudd. And bottom line is that it was now replaced, the first female Prime Minister of Australia ever. So another first out there. But you would think that the mining stocks like the BHP Billiton and possibly the Rio Tinto, Cliffs Natural, possibly some of the second-tier gold miners as well, but primarily the gold, I mean, the materials companies that do a lot of the mining inside of Australia and got a lot of the revenues from Australia, which were going to be hit by this tremendous tax, would have done well after the announcement. And in fact, they did. They did temporarily right when the market started moving up in Australia into the right after the election, and the mining stocks did very well. Well, subsequently, the next day, they turned around, and there's still a lot of confusion. It looks like that the issue will be at least watered down, but possibly not taken off the table right now. A couple of other points to mention, that the European woes obviously continue. George Soros, the famed money manager who made just billions of dollars on the default of the Russian ruble many years ago, is on the attack again. This time he's focusing in on the euro, talking about why it is just unsustainable and why the euro is eventually going to crack and default. Now, in the defense of full disclosure, just for a moment, and I don't know if this op-ed piece that he wrote had the full disclosure because I didn't see it, but you know, you have to look at, he's talking his book here, which may be something he believes in, and hopefully that's the case, not only just talking about it, but putting where his money where his mouth is here. But when it comes to this whole European situation, he is really becoming very vocal, and you just have to wonder how much of that is involved with the short position that he probably has on the euro. Nonetheless, the consideration of what's happening, even with the good auction we saw last week in Spain, and with the continuing either downgrades of some of the Spanish banks or the concern over the austerity programs in Greece and what's happening in Portugal, the daily movements in the market seem to be very much pegged to what's happening with the euro. In addition to that, we did see that the China, speaking about pegs, the China markets did, Chinese government did say that they're going to release the peg on the yuan to the dollar. At least they're going to allow it to float within a banded range. Now, a lot of people think this is a revaluation, but it's not. It's not a revaluation. Simply what it is a availability and allowance for the yuan to float up to a certain point, and that will be closely guarded by the Chinese government. And already we saw the first day it moved up slightly, but there was no actual move to the peg or to the number by the Chinese government. The second day, there was the allowance and the availability of that yuan to actually appreciate. What happened was the banks, the Chinese-owned and governed banks, were actively buying the U.S. dollar, therefore sending down the value of the yuan. So it actually backfired on Timothy Geithner. You have to listen to my discussion about this with John Dvorak on the DH Unplugged podcast. I think you'll find that very interesting. That's up right now over at dhunplugged.com. Apple's having some problems. They're obviously selling an enormous amount, not only of iPads, but of the iPhone 4. I just upgraded my iPhone, and I don't know. I just upgraded to the newest version with the supposed multitasking and a few other nice little features like zoom focus on your camera, threaded emails for, you know, multiple replies, a variety of really cool things in there. But it didn't seem like the multitasking is working for me. Maybe it's just certain programs that it works for. But nonetheless, there is some neat features. It's not like one of these things that you have to run out. Like, it's this amazing, oh my God, I have to have it. But it is interesting no matter what most people say otherwise. I would encourage you to upgrade and mention that it takes a lot of time to actually upgrade the system. But they're having some difficulty with the antennas on the iPhone 4, which is built around the rim. The silver edging of in the exterior of the iPhone is not only the Wi-Fi, but it's also the 3G antenna. And certain areas, if they're touched incorrectly, actually brings down the, we'll call it the bars on the antenna, and some people are getting dropped calls. And with all that's in production right now, you have to wonder what that's going to mean. Finally, BP. Again, these are just some of the recaps of the things we talked about last week. BP, their robotic, one of the robots that were underneath and doing some work, knocked into the containment cap, closed off one of the escape areas, and actually BP had to stop production. And unfortunately, they had to do something in the name, to hold off and to replace it and all that. I mean, they just can't get a break, this company. Stock is not doing well. It hasn't done well. And the question is going to be right now, are they going to be able to survive? Right now, they're looking for close to $5 to $10 billion of new financing in order to meet the needs of the cleanup, et cetera. They're looking to it at the banks and private investors. We'll see what happens. And finally, I want to talk about some of the economics. Very, very mixed. I mean, the headline numbers have been lousy. Durable goods came in this week, and they actually beat. And we saw that even though the headline number was down, which was expected for this month compared to last month, it was a slight beat, and it looked okay. Nothing to be excited about from a growth standpoint. We heard the report from the Fed and their statement that there's no policy change, but there are some questions as to the growth and sustainability of growth, primarily due to the European situation and the employment situation. Employment obviously stays stubbornly difficult to have anything to get better, although the initial claims we saw this week also were a little bit better, going at least in that direction. We'll see if that's a one-week aberration or not. In addition, we saw the worst, absolute, horrendous, definitely, the worst new home sales ever in the history of the report that was put out. Since 1963, they've been tracking new home sales, and we're talking a 300,000 annual pace of home sales, new home sales. Existing home sales dropped as well, but the new home sales looked horrible. What's interesting to note is that when you look at the existing home sales, the biggest drop was in the Northeast. The areas that you would think were the worst, like California, Texas, Arizona, Florida, and a few other of the states, actually did very well. As a matter of fact, when Lennar came out with their earnings this week, and they actually beat, but when they came out with their earnings and when they talked about what was going on with regard to the regional amounts of sales, they said that Florida has actually picked up very nicely, which I thought was kind of interesting. Not because I live here, but I thought it was interesting because there's so much overhead in inventory right now that you wouldn't think that was the case. But nonetheless, it was. But you look at all the rest of the economic numbers, and you look at the trend right now is definitely a softening of the economics. We'd have to see a little bit more to see if this is actually a rollover, because it's not getting there. It's more like straight line, and it's doing a little bit of a setback from the heightened level that we saw on a year-over-year basis. But things are not looking great right now. There are individual positions that look really prime. You know, you look at an Apple that's up from the low recently of 325 to 370. And you look at a whole host of the technology, some of the healthcare doing very well. But the regulatory overhang, mixed with some of the economic issues, and then on top of it, the concern about Europe, is really what's weighing on things, and we have to clean those up before we see, you know, anything move in a dramatic way even so, even though that this week was kind of a rough week on the markets, the last few weeks have been pretty good. And you have to wonder, you know, this movement, what it's from. I will tell you, we look at the trade desk numbers on a daily basis, and there still seems to be this enormous amount of, we'll call it hedge fund trading as well as futures traders. There's not a lot of individual stock commitments right now. We're seeing that across all the trading desks. And, you know, that is good and bad because people are concerned. The covering of shorts is going on in a lot of different areas that's pushing things up, and then they're just kind of selling off and bleeding off. But again, it's much more of a the moves are much more broad-based futures driven, and you could tell that by the intraday movement. When you see the market down 1%, 1.5%, and it ends up for the day or vice versa, those are futures moves that are moving the whole market in one fell swoop. So keep that in mind when you're thinking about what's going on with these markets. We'll keep you abreast of what's going on. Of course, you could find out a lot more at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. We're going to answer a lot of questions right after we get to our guests. We're going to take a quick pause and bring up Kate Stalter from Investors Business Daily when we get back. And then right after that, we're going to get into a few of your questions. So stick around. We'll be right back on the Disciplined Investor podcast with Kate Stalter from IBD. All right, we're back with my special guest, a good friend, Kate Stalter from Investors Business Daily. And as I told you in the beginning of the show, and I've told you many times before, one of my favorite things to do on the weekend is to get the, we call it the little paper, because it's just so compact and so nice. And that's what I like about it, actually, versus some of the other newspapers, that it just gives me the facts that I want. But reading that on a Saturday or so is great. Kate, how are you?
Great. It's great to be here, Andrew. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks. By the way, just a quick story. 2 weeks ago, I go outside, and I said, all right, let me go grab the paper. The paper wasn't there. And so what we do is we go, if I have to, I'll just take a ride to Publix or something, and I'll grab the paper, because they always have it for me. So I went over there, and they didn't have it. That was weird. I made another call at Barnes & Noble. Nope, they don't have it either. So I called up in the afternoon. I called up the IBD service desk. I said, what's the story? I mean, what's going on, right? And they said that there was, I guess, an accident or something with one of the drivers, so that the newspaper's not available. But nicely enough, they actually offered me the online version, which is the full newspaper online, which was actually really cool that we read it that way. I still prefer the paper, you know, in my fingers. So,
I use the IBD product quite a bit myself, and it is very handy. You know, get up early in the morning, and you want to check the news, check what's in there. That's where we're EIBD. But you're absolutely right. Depending on how you use the paper and what your needs are, both products are terrific.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about. I have so many different things. Let's start off with the Investors Business Daily investing mantra, if you will. Tell me a little bit about that.
Right. What IBD does is steers people towards the best growth stocks that currently have the best performance fundamentally and technically. So in other words, what you're looking for is something that's shown terrific earnings growth combined with sales growth in recent quarters and ideally in recent years. That's historically what the best winners have shown. And also, you're looking for that combined with some good price and volume action on the chart. You want to see a stock price that's been moving up in heavy trading, which shows you that it's getting support from the professional investors. And, you know, Andrew, one of the first questions that newer people will ask is, well, wait a minute. You want to look on the chart and see a stock that's being bought up and rising higher? Absolutely. You don't want to be looking at the beaten down stocks that are still continuing to fall to lows. You want to be looking at the ones that the institutions are showing their faith in, because that, historically, again, these are all based on historical models, that's when a stock is most likely to continue rising to new price gains. And you know, we have, Bill O'Neill has the book, How to Make Money in Stocks. We do the column, Investor's Corner, in the papers. So over and over again, historically, there are just so many examples of how that style of investing has proven to work very effectively.
And what I think what's interesting about that is that doesn't mean that that's, you know, a stock that you buy that's been moving up, that has institutional support and all that, is always going to maintain that. And I think that's the interesting thing. If that doesn't occur, and if that does turn to be a different scenario in the future, the reality is that your research would say, well, that's time to get out of that.
Exactly. Great follow-up, because that's the next thing. is you don't just want to buy a stock and forget about it. You have to be very aware of the market's trend itself, what it's currently doing, because three-fourths of stocks follow the market's direction. So if we're in a market such as we've seen lately with quite a bit of selling, you want to be very careful, monitor any stocks you're holding very carefully to see if they are being sold off in heavy volume, if they're falling beneath key moving averages, for instance. You want to keep your gains. If you have paper gains in a stock, you want to keep them. And one thing certainly is, if you sell when the market is weakening, if it does begin to show strength again and your stock does appear that it's resuming a rally and is reaching a new buy point, you can always buy it again.
Right.
It's, that's always something you can do. And, you know, another one of the key rules, too, is after you buy a stock and say in the first few days afterwards it begins to fall from its buy point, this is one of the key tenets of IBD investing, is sell your stock if it falls 7% below the buy point. No questions asked, because historically what has been shown is that if a stock does that, it's typically does not have what it takes to rally higher at that point and make further gains.
Right. You know, in this market, though, and when I say this market of the last couple of years, you know, a 7% move, a 5% move is very, you know, can happen very quickly. And, you know, you have to kind of be on your toes, I guess, if it gets back to that buy point. So if you, I know that, you know, when you look at a thing like you like to look at, various technical patterns, the cup and handle, and you buy a 10% over mm-hmm. the buy point. If you look at, or 10 cents over the buy point, and if you're looking at double bottoms, you're looking at your railroad tracks as cautionary signs, you're looking at just a variety of different patterns that you're looking at, the drop-off may be momentarily, but it can come back, of course. You know, you can have that stock move back, because as you said, three-quarters of the stocks out there are going to follow the markets in general. You can have the best stock in the world, but if the markets are selling off, the probability is that the stock is going to maybe not sell off as much, or it may sell off more, depending on the circumstance. So I think that, you know, obviously the reason why you have, and from my understanding, is the reason why you have your general market condition is a market in rally, a market in correction, a rally under pressure, or whatever it may be, gives you the idea, okay, you know, that if you're buying stocks, maybe it's time to have some caution, right?
That's exactly it. You know, one of the things that happens if you buy in a market that's trending lower, and you're very likely at that point to see the volatility you were just talking about, like where you buy a stock, and at that point, you might see more stocks that are dropping 7% from that buy point. You put your money at risk really unnecessarily in many of these cases. So that's why all of these things are rules that are put in place to help increase your success. Of course, you're going to find exceptions all the time, but historically, going back, our models have proven that this is a way for individual investors to increase their success. Now, one of the interesting things, too, is that individuals don't have to stay invested all the time the way the funds do.
Right.
So that's a tremendous advantage. If you see your stock is falling, and you don't even have to wait for it to go 7% below the buy point. If it's 3%, 4%, 5%, volume is picking up, it's just not acting right, you can get out of there as an individual. A fund manager really can't do that.
Right, exactly. So, you know, you've had a lot of winners over the years, and, you know, like a Baidu, Apple. I know that you like, you know, the Chipotles and that. One of the companies that I'm interested in, I want to follow up, because actually we hold this company, and I know that you guys like this company. It's Lululemon. Now, one of the things they just had a great quarter. They had they've had great quarters. They had a great quarter just a couple of weeks back, and the stock did very well after the quarterly announcement, and then it started kind of selling off a little bit, but popped back up and all. I have a question for you, though. I know this is also on what you call the IBD 100, which is your 100 top investment ideas, I guess is the best way to describe it. Would that be right?
Well, what it really is, because it's not the, that's a great question. The IBD 100 is not a buy list. That's not necessarily the ideas that you should be pursuing at that moment. What that shows you is how the top performing stocks are doing, and top performing is determined by that combination of the fundamentals and the technicals. So these are the market's very best stocks fundamentally and technically. You know, it really is, it is a great source of idea generation. You just always have to be sure not only are the stocks at a proper buy point and that the market itself is in an uptrend, but if any stock you buy fits in with what you already have in your portfolio, that it meets your own risk tolerance. For example, you don't necessarily want to load up with a bunch of very small caps. That could be riskier. We're looking at, I just pulled up a chart for Lululemon here. For example, say you have a number of other clothing retailers in your portfolio. Mm-hmm. You have perhaps Ann Taylor, which is part of the same industry group. I'll just use that as an example. How many women's clothing stores do you really want in the portfolio? Because you might get really smacked around if something happens to that entire group. So you have to balance out all these decisions. But having said all that, the IBD 100, I use it as a terrific idea generator. I know you do. And it's definitely a great list, a great place to begin some of your research.
Well, how does a stock go from, let's say, the number five spot to the number one spot? What does that mean?
You know, again, it's coming back to that idea of the combined fundamentals and technicals. And, of course, the technicals are going to change a lot more often than the fundamentals are. So, for example, if a stock does, say, make a 5% price move in one particular week and volume is heavy, that, for example, is one of the things that could have an effect of boosting the stock higher on the list. And that doesn't mean that it's a better buy candidate at all. And this is something that that is very important to understand about that IBD 100. Doesn't mean you should buy it at that moment just because you saw it jump from maybe number 10 last week to number 5 this week.
Yeah.
What that means is it is a strong performer. Keep an eye on it. And when it does begin consolidating gains, then you might want to watch and see when is it going to be approaching its next proper buy point. One of the interesting things about that IBD 100, Andrew, and also some of our other features, like the Big Cap 20, which runs on Tuesday, and your weekly review, which runs on Friday, one of the interesting things about all of those is in a market that's trending higher, the stocks that are near buy points are highlighted in heavy black borders. I'm sure you've seen those.
Right.
So that's sort of an extra alert to people, like, hey, this one is showing some exceptional strength right now. Is that one of those points that really could possibly mean it's ready to go higher just based on our models? So that might be worth an extra look.
Mm. So the markets have been really, this is an understatement, the markets have been very volatile of late. The VIX is, in the 30 range. We see 1 week up 1%, 2%. Well, forget about weeks. Weeks don't matter right now. Days, we've seen, 1% to 2% movements on a daily basis, which I find very disturbing. And I find that combined with that is that if you could find fundamentally sound stocks and you could find charts that work well, you may have currency issues that are just whacking things out because we have so much political uncertainty and so much sovereign issues that are being brought to the market every day. It was for a while there, the news was actually, there was a point that the news out of the world, at the worst time of the markets back in 2009, every single day there was just a blast of news from the various different countries trying to show how things will be better. Then we got this lull. It was nice. It was like I could sleep again, where I don't have to worry about every single second of every day somebody coming out with something else. Now we're almost back to that again, where we're having Soros saying, the euro is going to get blown up, and Trichet fighting back and saying, well, that's not the case. And then we have, a situation where in Afghanistan, McChrystal's being, and we got BP, that they knocked their robotics, knocked off the cap. And it's like this ongoing, aside from even earnings, it's an ongoing, amazing amount of information that's being thrown out there. So for investors, because of the volatility that may have really nothing to do with their stock, right? So let's say they only own one stock and there's volatility in the markets and has nothing to do with the stock they own. What's the best course of action? What do they do?
These are so many considerations, and you're exactly right. I mean, these are one of the things that IBD really specializes in is we're growth investing with some safeguards. So, it's like you just said, you want to be able to sleep at night, not be worrying about your portfolio. One of the key things, this is kind of what we've been talking about a little bit today, is when do you know when it's time to sell, when to avoid buying? People shouldn't be afraid to sell. And I think that is something that IBD has emphasized for many years, that is not only how you keep your gains, but it's also how you protect yourself in a crazy market. I mean, right now, IBD's market outlook changed on Thursday to uptrend under pressure in response to all the selling pressure that we've seen, obviously, in recent days. You know, that is an extra red flag just to use some caution. The flip side of that is when a new bull market does begin, the signals that you can follow on a market chart and that IBD will alert you to, it's not any kind of secret sauce. It's price and volume action on a chart that anybody can see, but we know people are busy, so we alert everybody to that. But the flip side is not only will we tell you about that on the downside, but also on the upside. For example, back in March of 2009, and, you know, it's funny because I recall this, just what you said, all the news back then was just coming at you fast and furious. I mean, you know, don't forget employment and housing news, Andrew. I mean, those are a couple other pieces of bad news that are out there.
Right.
And, you know, when the bad news just won't quit, it is usually the time that the indexes do begin to turn around, because the institutional investors do start to step in and say, okay, you know, we don't see where this is really going any lower, and the institutions jump in there. So for an individual, you know, don't you be trying to guess what the high or the low is. Let the institutional investors tell you. IBD will pass along that information to you as well. And then you can benefit from the trend. That's really the upshot of all of that, is follow the trend. Now, in this case, absolutely, the trend has been very volatile. It's been difficult. And that does tell you why it's so important to follow a key set of buy and sell rules. You know, if you do see a stock falling below that buy point, get out of there as quickly as you can. If a market is as it is right now, with the uptrend under selling pressure, that's another time that in most cases you probably want to avoid new buys at that juncture.
Right.
Because the market is showing.
Yeah, they're showing that there's something going on there. So the different codes you have, we'll call it, is what? You have market in a rally, or what do you call it? Market in uptrend, confirmed uptrend.
Yeah, market in confirmed uptrend. That's the best one, of course. That's
right.
The one we all like to see. Uh-huh.
And then you have market in correction, right?
Yeah, actually, between then you'll get market uptrend under pressure.
Okay.
Which after the close of trade on Thursday, that was where the market direction went into, just mm-hmm. because of all the selling across the indexes in recent days. We haven't seen enough days of heavy volume selling to confirm a new downtrend, but that is sort of the precursor to that fairly often.
Right.
So then what happens when you see several days of heavy volume selling within a short period of time? Sometimes it's a few weeks, sometimes it's even shorter than that if it happens very quickly. Then you have market in correction.
Right, and then you have to have the follow-through day, et cetera, to make it into a rally again. So let's talk a little bit about the various ways that you know, each day, so everybody knows, each day Kate or somebody from her staff or from IBD does a market review and does a stock of the day, so to speak. But they do a video. It's right on the website. It's mm-hmm. free. It's for,
right.
You know, you can check that out, and that's really kind of neat. And, you know, they go through the various discussion of volume trends and what has happened and, you know, all the different things that happen, whether it's on a market basis or whether it happens on individual stock basis. The other thing that you do is you use your CAN-SLIM methodology. Now, for those of you that don't know what that is, it's an acronym, and it was created by William O'Neill, who was the inventor of this of the Investor's Business Daily, the founder of Investor's Business Daily. And each letter stands for something else. One of the things that you do look for a lot is the N, which is something new technology, new, you know, a new process of something of that nature.
Right.
So, you know, what would be, for example, you know, right now, I mean, Apple was an N. It probably was an N 12 different mm-hmm. times.
Right, that's right.
Right,
that's a great example.
You know, because uh-huh. you know they come out with something, and they're and now there's no more N, and something new that's going to be a catalyst. But then they come out with the iPad, for example.
Right.
You know,
right.
Lululemon has mm-hmm. you know some new clothing that may be revolutionary, for example. You know, Mercado Libre is not necessarily a new company with an eBay like process, but it is new for Latin America. As an
exactly.
example,
right?
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the stocks that has always kind of perplexed me that's on your list is a stock called Medifast. Now, Medifast is a diet supplement course slash program, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things that always troubled me was that it's done very well, by the way.
And mm-hmm.
Very well. And one of the things that always kept us away from it was the constant fraud detection alerts that we see from a variety of our sites. Now, I don't know if you look at this and look how deep is this, but there's always been this kind of underlying issue that I keep on seeing. Now, whether or not it's somebody just trying to find something bad about them, you know, it always haunts me as something that I'm, if we get into this, is it going to just fall out of bed one day and just crash on us? Remember what happened with Herbalife way back when?
Right, and you're right. Medifast itself had a big decline earlier this year on some questions about fraudulent practices. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. You know, this is sort of the thing. I alluded to this a few minutes ago. Every investor has to sort of check their own risk tolerance with any stock. And you know, the story of a stock is an important factor. One of the things that Bill O'Neill, the founder of IBD, one of the things that he always says is go to the New America section, read a story about the company, understand its business, understand its strengths and its weaknesses. And, you know, absolutely, Andrew, you're right. If a stock has, you know, perhaps people attacking it from different areas and maybe some pressure from lawsuits and so forth, if that's the kind of thing that you as an investor are saying, you know, I can't sleep at night if I own this one, by all means, that should not be the stock you own because it doesn't fit within your own risk tolerance.
Right. And finally, you know, one of the things that you know, I find that most people obviously do a lot of work online. You know, the newspaper, forgive me for this, but some of the quotes and all that, you don't need to get necessarily there anymore. You can get that online. And investors.com obviously has a lot about that. And your charting and your subscription services are great. One of the things that you also have on there is an industry ranking process that shows what industries are moving, how they're moving, what's moving up week by week. It could be last week the industry was, for example, number 12, and this week it's number 35. You know, so what happens is you take the conglomeration of all the stocks in there. And I think you have, 187, 78? How many industries?
197 groups.
97 industry groups. So there's subsets of sectors in there.
Exactly. There are 33 sectors that IBD tracks, and within those 197 industry groups, really placed very finely, so you can compare apples to apples, so to speak, within the different groups.
So, you know, one of the things, how do you use the industry group moves to then clue you into what's happening? Is it sort of like if something starts moving up the ranks and you can see last week versus this week, it was, you know, number 200 last week, or it wouldn't be that high, but number 75 last week and number, you know, 50 this week. Is that something you want to look into because something's happening with those securities? Is that how it goes?
That's exactly it. You know, stocks tend to move in a pack because the institutional investors might see one stock they like and then another one that in a related business might start to get bought up sort of in tandem with that. Bill O'Neill writes about this a bit in How to Make Money in Stocks. I mean, one of the things, a good example I can think of that we've seen recently was in the last few months how Netflix and Coinstar both were among some of IABD's leaders. Those are, you know, right now Coinstar is falling a bit, but I'm talking about in the last few months how those two were kind of moving up at the same time, and you could see the similarities in the businesses there between, for example, the Redbox video rentals and the Netflix streaming and mail order video rentals. So that's a case in point of what you're talking about. Now, you know, you wouldn't necessarily want to just see a group that is ranked highly and run in there and start buying the stocks from the group. That's not really how it works, because you can see occasionally, for example, a stock with terrible fundamentals, but for whatever reason, it's being bought up on the promise of some new technology, for example. I mean, that happens frequently. Based on some news report, you see it under heavy buying. That's the kind of thing you would not want to do just because you see that group rising higher. You still want to look at the group and within a top-ranked group determine which are the leaders there. When it comes to the fundamentals and technicals. One great way, Andrew, while we're talking about investors.com, we have a feature on the site called Stock Checkup. And that is a terrific way to go in. You enter the ticker, and then you can see the other top-rated stocks within that group. So you see all the leaders within that group. You can compare them all side by side and understand which one might be one to watch or add to your portfolio. Great way to do that.
Cool. Very nice. So, I mean, there's just so much out there. I mean, there's so many questions I have about, you know, the things that you do, because the vast nature of what you have is amazing. We actually use some of your advanced charting features here and you know, for what we do. And then the one thing is that has always been something that I found interest in, aside from the groups, is your composite ratings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you use a variety of different techniques, and that's how actually when you get the higher composite ratings, which deals with the fundamentals, et cetera, you know, that's how it obviously moves higher up into a better opportunity, possibly, assuming you have all the other things that make sense along the way. What is probably, you know, as you see, what would be the best way for someone to, you know, start looking at, you know, hey, what does investors have to offer? Would it be the website? Would it be the newspaper? Or what do you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if somebody's new and wants to check this out, absolutely. Go to the homepage of investors.com. That's kind of your introduction to all of these. I mean, one of the things we've said for years, you've heard us say this, you can sign up for a free trial there if you're interested. Also, one thing that we're really excited about right now is our meetup groups, the IBD meetups. And these are growing all over the country. I know you have listeners all over the country. If they go to the homepage of investors.com and scroll down a little bit, and there's a tab on there where they can, it's under the event calendar on the homepage, and there's a tab that says meetup. You have to scroll down on the page to see it. And under the meetups tab, you can enter your zip code and find a meeting near you. And you know, this is just a terrific way in combination. We also have seminars that you can see on the event calendar there. And it all really works hand in hand to educate investors all through the process of maybe just getting into the market, wondering what do I do in these conditions, how do I identify the best stocks. All these different ways will help you really make that journey a little easier. And with the meetups, we have experts from IBD who go out and talk to the groups, and it's just a great environment to be among like-minded folks who are interested in growth investing, and you can run your ideas by them, get some ideas from them on how they're using IBD, and help build up your understanding of this process.
That's great stuff. I mean, folks, the reason why this, you know, this sounds, you know, I'm not really challenging, because I agree with everything Kate says. The fact of the matter is I am a big fan and a subscriber to IBD, seriously. And this is not a paid announcement or anything like that. As a matter of fact, in my first book, when we went down the list of those tools in the chapter that said tools of the trade, what to use, and we made the list of different newspapers, daily periodicals to use, or weekly periodicals to use, the number one newspaper to read was Investors Business Daily. That, you know, what I like about it is that there are areas that you may want to skip, maybe the opinion pieces and all that you want to skip, although I like them. But you know what? If you want the heart of the matter and probably in a half-hour read on a Saturday to get the full depth of what's going on in the markets, what is happening there, you know, various stocks, insight into new technology, also a lot about marketing and management, viewpoints on political, they are a little bit more right-leaning. Can we say that?
You can say that. There's something in the paper really for everyone who's interested in investment and the economy. And you know, if you just want to get in there and get the names of the best stocks, you can certainly just use the paper just for that. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, I encourage you to check it out. Really, I encourage you for your own investment process, if nothing else, to check out investors.com. Put that on your bookmarks and to check out the Saturday edition. I mean, every day edition is fine, but I'm a big fan of the Saturday edition. It just because I have too much, you know, information coming in otherwise. But I also use their online version as well for their screener, if you will, and for their online charts. So the premium charts. Anyway, Kate Stalter, you are great, and I hopefully you'll be able to maybe one of these days come down to Florida and visit. And I know you're very busy.
Yeah.
They keep you locked up in there, doing all those after-hours videos and all. But say hello to the gang, and one of these days we'll get together, and thanks for joining me today.
All right, Andrew. Thanks a lot. This has been fun.
All right, see you soon. Bye-bye. I really enjoy Kate. She's just great. And I encourage you to check out the things that we talked about today. For example, you want to look at the daily stock analysis. The Monday Morning Special is a great paper to read. It gives you a lot of really good information. And you know what? The composite ratings and the composite view on Investors Business Daily is great. Check out investors.com and you'll see all the things I mean. And also look at the group rankings. That's kind of neat. As I promised you in the beginning of this episode, we had a lot of questions. So I'm going to start out with these. We'll see how many we get through here. But let's see. I have one from Greg Phillips. He says, listening to Harry Dent was certainly depressing. No kidding. But but let's assume he is right about the prediction for late June and July. Again, we're assuming the markets go south, or rather just say that it's now August and it did go south. Where should I have put my money? Should I be ultra careful and move it to cash? Should I move it to bonds? Should I move it to income versus growth stocks? Keep it diversified? I know there's no one answer here, but thanks for your thoughts and overall strategy, or at least something to think about. Thanks always. Appreciate your great responses, Greg. You know, Greg, here's the deal. If you believe what Harry Dent is saying, which, by the way, is fine, you can believe that, and that may be true, and that may be exactly what's going on. I think what you need to consider is that if you can't figure out what's going on, why play the game at all? You know, if you want to be involved and you think it's going down and you want to make profits if the stock market does move down or a particular stock moves down, hey, great. Then you can play short. You can use an ETF. You can use individual position short, etc. You can use options. The other point is, though, if you don't want to be involved in this and you don't want to worry about your money getting lost, let's say during that time, you know, if you're not comfortable doing it yourself or even handing it off to a manager, then you know what? Take some or all of your money out and put it in a temporary parking place until you can get through that. But realize something, Greg, realize something. If that doesn't occur, don't be mad at yourself. Just have a plan, go with the plan, and that's that. Now, what happens if, let me give you some food for thought here. What happens if the market doesn't go down in August? And you said, you know what? It didn't happen. My money's been safe. I'm good. I'm going back in at this point. And what happened if Harry Dent's, his time period, his target time was not exactly right? What then? What happens if it does crash down 3 months later? What are you going to think about then? How are you going to protect yourself on the downside at that point? Anyway, just thinking about that. Think about that. Think about what you want to do with that. I think the game plan right now is that you need to stay very nimble. We still think that we're in a downstroke here in a general bull market, or at least the trend right now at this moment. That could change at any given time, even with the market being down. But we see there's a lot of resiliency on support points in the market. So I think when we look at the situation right now, I think you need to be very, very flexible. And whatever your decision is, don't do it out of fear or greed. Do it with, not, I'll say, good discipline, of course, but do it with intent. All right, the next one comes from, how do you say this? Ivaylo. I'll call him Ivan. First, let me thank you for producing the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I've been listening for a year now and find it really informative and educational. I heard you say that Fausto Puglisi from Cyber Trading University is going to join your show, and I think it'll be great if you discuss with him the topic of HFT. By the way, Fausto is on this next week's show. How does HFT, or high-frequency trading, impact day traders? It seems a day trader would be competing with machines to take advantage of the minor intraday swings in supply and demand and thus be fighting a losing battle. What would be his comment, I wonder? I hope it is not a trader's need more education, since no trader can be consistent and efficient as a computer algorithm. I'm just going to tell you right now, we'll talk about that as well. But yes, you know, Ivan, the point here is that you are playing a game against a computer. Remember that game? I think it was called, there was a game, a computer game. What was that show? It was when this kid set something off. It was the Whopper, the W-O-P-R, and he, War Games. The computer, it was called War Games. And he went in there, and this kid hacked the system on the government war game, and he started a nuclear catastrophe between Russia and the United States. Now, what happened was, the way that they got him to solve that was they allowed the computer to play tic-tac-toe and realized there was no winner in any of those after over time. The point here, though, is that, you know, during a short period of time, because the difference between you and a machine is the emotion involved in your trading. When you have an unlimited amount of money, essentially, as the big brokers do, the Goldman's, JPs, the Greenhills, you know, these guys that are really, you know, involved in some of this, or any of the high-frequency traders, I should really say, we'll just stick to the big boys for a second. You know, these guys are not worried about losing money as you are. They know they'll make it back and they have the ability to actually move markets. You do not. And you're playing against them, so, you know, best of luck, I got to tell you. So, yes, you're playing against the machines, and that's probably a losing battle if you don't have a lot of rules set up there. We have another one from Jack. Let's see. This is actually a guy's name, Joe. Joe is his name. JPEG is his other initials, so if you know who you are. It says, Andrew, I was listening to the John Markman podcast a couple of weeks back, and he mentioned the professionals never set actual sell stops because it's asking for your money to be taken. Sell stops, on the other hand, are preached by everyone and their brother. Can market makers actually see a stop even though it's not actually activated until a certain point? When you have sell stops, are you talking about a price in which you would get out or actually putting the sell stop order in? Great question here, and I think there's two answers to this. I think that the point that John Markman was making there was that for the most part, you know, a lot of people have sell stops, first of all, at round numbers. For example, say that a stock is trading at $38.50, okay? And a lot of people put their stops in at, let's say, $38. Round numbers. We never use, as best as possible, never use a round number. We'll do something like a $37.88. You give a little room, because what happens is when those sell stops trigger, they're going to take the stock down because it becomes a market order. So you go from 38 to maybe 38.90. But a little bit lower than that is kind of a little bit of a safety valve. So we always try to bring it down a little bit, say, okay, we're willing to lose a little bit more money because we have that safety valve where everybody else and their brother are putting in the sell stops at round numbers oftentimes. You also see a lot of people putting in sell stops exactly at support points, because if it breaches that, they tend to go down from there. We like to go, again, a little bit under there because it's the same theory. The smart traders know that you're doing that. It's a game of cat and mouse. And they know. Have you ever noticed that when you put that sell stop in and when you put it down to the point that you think it's the lowest point it can go and that's when it stops, and all of a sudden your sell stop hits and the stock turns around and bounces back up? How annoying is that? I mean, it's happened to you, right? So when we look at this and we look at the situation when it comes to sell stops, I think it's a very wise thing to do. But utilize them sparingly and utilize them in a way that maybe has a sell stop limit, that it won't sell beyond a certain price so you don't get smacked by that. But generally speaking, professionals, because they're trading actively, have alerts set up. We call those soft stops, and we know what we can do and react to those and then trade out the position if we're going to on the information rather than putting it in automatically. Can they see them? You know, depending on the broker, the internals can see those, yes. And there are ways to actually set that up differently as well. Last question that we're going to have today is from Sean Standifer. And he says, I've been listening to your podcast for a while. You've talked about investing in the BRIC countries at various points, but I don't think I've ever heard of more information about how to do so. What other ticker symbols of funds that one should look into investing in BRIC countries? What are the good resources of information on this? I mean, the BRIC countries are basically BRIC, right? Brazil, Russia, India, and China. So Brazil, you can look at the EWZ. Russia, you can look up RSX. India, EPI. And China, we like to, you know, kind of break it up a little bit. It's kind of like a combination of Hong Kong, but FXI and CAF. Those are the symbols that you could utilize that are well-traded ETFs. And if you want, make a pool of, let's say, four of those. Split it up by 25% apiece. You know, if you want to have a 5% position in BRICS, that's one thing. This way you know you have direct involvement in those specific countries. Now, that being said, I like other countries too. We like Taiwan right now. You know, maybe you want to look into Turkey. There's an interesting economy right there. Strange area in terms of the Eastern European area right now, but Turkey's a good area to look at. South Korea, Singapore are interesting areas also to look at, and Mexico. So I don't know what the acronym would be for all of those. Put them all together, it's probably BRICMAXIC. But if you know, think about it, that the BRICS are an interesting place. It's just something that we look at as a benchmark for the emerging markets that are really the ones that are the powerhouses out there. So hopefully that answered your question. Again, if you have a question, ask Andrew at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And I'm always here for you. Hopefully you'll tune in next week when we have Fausto Puglisi. Thanks for joining me today. Thanks for being here. Thanks for subscribing on iTunes. I wish you well. This is Andrew Horowitz saying goodbye for now. Wish you a very successful week. And thanks for listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.